This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Welcome to the Journal of Neurosurgery podcast for February 25th, 2011. I'm Natalie Pinchem. The topics of the articles featured in this podcast are vascular disorders, peripheral nerve, and neurosurgical history. Prediction of adverse outcomes by blood glucose level after endovascular therapy for acute ischemic stroke. A clinical article by Sabarish Natarajan and colleagues. The authors retrospectively analyzed the prognostic significance of blood glucose on 90-day outcomes in 614 patients with acute ischemic stroke who had received endovascular revascularization at 7 US centers. In non-diabetic patients, a blood glucose level of greater than 116 milligrams per deciliter at admission and failure of the glucose level to drop more than 30 milligrams per deciliter after 48 hours were both significant predictors of poor outcome and death at 90 days. In diabetic patients, a blood glucose level greater than 116 milligrams per deciliter at admission was an independent predictor of a poor 90-day outcome. The fall in blood glucose in the first 48 hours after admission was not a predictor of 90-day outcome in diabetic patients. Although a rising blood glucose level at admission has previously been shown to be associated with increasing mortality rates and declining functional outcomes in patients with acute ischemic stroke, the cutoff at which it affected the mortality rate in the patients in this study was lower than previously reported. A simplified 6-point scale corresponded with poor 90-day outcomes. This so-called branch scale includes blood glucose at admission, thrombolysis in myocardial infarction grade 2 to 3 reperfusion, age, National Institutes of Health stroke scale score, change in blood glucose at 48 hours, and symptomatic intracranial hemorrhage. Failure of blood glucose values to decrease in the first 48 hours after acute ischemic stroke intervention correlated with poor 90-day outcomes in non-diabetic patients. The branch scale shows promise as a simple prognostication tool after endovascular therapy for acute ischemic stroke, and the authors believe that this offers a compelling rationale for further prospective evaluation. Double fascicular nerve transfer to the biceps and brachialis muscles after brachial plexus injury. Clinical outcomes in a series of 29 cases. A clinical article by Wilson Ray and co-authors. In this report, the authors discussed the clinical outcomes of patients with brachial plexus injuries who were treated with a double fascicular nerve transfer. They describe their experience in using fascicles from the median and ulnar nerves to re-innervate the biceps and brachialis muscles. Their study is a retrospective review of the outcomes of 29 consecutive patients with brachial plexus injuries treated with a double fascicular transfer to restore elbow flexion. Good outcomes were reported in over 90% of the treated patients. In addition, the authors found no evidence of functional deficit in the donor nerve distribution, and thus they concluded that the double fascicular nerve transfer produces reliable restoration of elbow flexion in patients with upper brachial plexus injuries. Cushing and the treatment of brain wounds during World War I, a historical vignette by Michael Carey. Harvey Cushing, preeminent among the world's pioneering neurosurgeons, was an army neurosurgeon in France from 1917 to 1918. During World War I, most brain wounds were debrided and left open because they were often infected. Cushing published two works on the surgical treatment of wartime brain wounds in 1918. In his second, a 126-page paper, which did not contain a single reference, Cushing discussed the primary closure of wounds, including brain wounds, in considerable detail. The casual reader might easily infer that Cushing devised this innovative technique. As the decades passed, he was eventually credited as the originator of brain wound care. This report shows that such attribution is misplaced. The Hungarian surgeon, Robert Boronyi, closed contaminated but not infected wounds as early as 1914 and published two papers on this technique in 1915. In 1916, Edmund Welter published an article on the primary closure of brain wounds in La Presse Médicale. Cushing read these publications and cited Boronyi's work in a 1916 publication on the treatment of brain wounds. Omitting the known works of predecessors in his own writings was an egregious breach of scientific writing protocol. The author states that failure to credit predecessors, peers, and other contributors was an unfortunate Cushing trait. Thank you for listening to the Journal of Neurosurgery. To listen to more of our podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org. You can also follow the JNS on Twitter.